This is a replay of the Tuesday night, May 19th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best deal, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
From the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, and we can talk about just about anything, including the loss of Schlitz. And I swear to God, I thought they were gone. But, of course, there was the Chicago connection, and they were bought by Pabst in 1999. So I guess I shouldn't wax too sentimental about the whole thing. It's been coming. All right. If you got any thoughts, that's great. So there I was, an hour and a half before the show, 90 minutes, I got time to spare. Maybe I'll do a little work outside in the backyard shed. And it was black paint. Yeah, it was flat black paint at a distance. Doused me, all right? White pants, of course I'm wearing white pants, don't you know? So I quickly run into the bathroom, of course, trailing the black paint everywhere I go. There's a reminder, don't you know? And the bathroom floor will never quite be the same, I don't think. Ripping off my clothes and immediately getting in the shower. Well, I first decided I'm going to use the handheld. Yeah, well, then I decided I wasn't, and I was doing something else. Well, anyway, I flipped the switch, not realizing the water was on handheld and not on shower, and doused the entire bathroom. Meanwhile, I'm still covered in black paint, and that's about the time I realize I better wash my hair. Yeah, because it ain't black. Well, it was then. And so I do this, and bottom line is it took until about 6 minutes before this show for me to clean up the disaster, and thank God it's not television. Yeah, right, exactly, because after the show is over, I'll take another shower and start over. But yeah, of all the things, and you think, oh, it's just going to be about 10 minutes here, so I'll catch my breath somewhat during the show, and if you want to call in the meantime, I'd love it. Jeffrey from Alsip did, and we're going to start off with him on WGN Radio. How's it going, Jeffrey?
Yeah, listen, first I wanted to mention, you talked about cell phones a few days ago. Do you recall that?
No, but that's all right. I might have. So what are we talking about cell phones?
Well, the thing is that what I was going to tell you is that, you know, they do a lot of research and development about a lot of things. And sometimes they take a long time before they come out. And I can recall when I was 7 years old, and this was 1964, that they had already developed a cell phone, a flip phone. And my mother used to work for Illinois Bell, and in her building was the research and development department. And she used to go down to the lunchroom, and they would bring some of those people that made those things would come down to the lunchroom and show those things off. And my mother, they showed one to my mother, and she knew how to work it and everything. But what was interesting is that this was 1964, and people don't realize it, but sometimes it takes a very long time to develop something like that. And you mentioned also.
Let's back up on this, because anything in the 60s was not a cell phone; it was a mobile phone. And I don't know that much.
This was a prototype.
Yeah, right. Okay.
This is a prototype.
The dawn of the handheld cellular was actually Martin Cooper of Motorola, and that was 1973. And he did it as a rival to Bell Labs. Now, by the way, they always say portable. The thing weighed 2.5 pounds. It required 10 hours to charge. It gave you 30 minutes of talk time. And so,
well, I only remember what she told me. But
yeah.
The thing is that it looked like the same thing that was on the Star Trek thing, the cage.
Okay.
But the thing is that that's another thing. They also show things like what they're working on, you know, and experimenting. They'll show it on TV or some movie or something. Because I know I also saw, and this was, because I bought the movie, I have it somewhere, but it was a sci-fi movie, and it was from 1951, and it was in color. And they had a flat screen television on there.
Oh, I know. We were talking about that. That isn't it interesting that television shows and movies that had things, like back in the day, they'd show people in spacesuits, and then later when, you know, our astronauts went up, it's like, they look like the same spacesuit. So, yes, it is interesting how things predate it, and then we see that what we get is pretty similar, and it does make you wonder.
Yeah, well, you know, I think they developed the thing. It may have been having problems, and that maybe, you know, like with the battery or something, and maybe that's why it took so long.
Well, no,
I've always been curious about those things.
As far as what you're calling cell phones, remember, prior to the advent of cellular networks, these were mobile phones. They were not cell phones.
Well, this was a flip phone.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the thing looks like. It, there was no network for it to work on, you see. So they were mobile phones. And the first commercially available mobile phone, Motorola, I remember this. It was $4,000. It was about 1983. Damn thing, we called it the brick.
Yeah, I know. I had one.
Right,
of those
but
things.
That's
I had one.
Right. Then you remember.
But
I,
that's
I think
why it always confused me, because that's what she told me. She told me it was a little one, a little thing. They fit in the palm of your hand, and you flip it and talk.
Well,
but it was inside the building. You couldn't take it out.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is it wasn't working on a cell network because there weren't any, but it could be a mobile phone. That can happen.
The other thing I wanted to mention was that I read a book lately about how the gangsters died, and there were two things that blew my mind. One was on Bonnie and Clyde, and one was on Dillinger.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know this about Bonnie and Clyde, but, you know, and like in the movie with Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty, he steps out of the car and they shoot him down.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, they don't tell in the movie, and none pictures or anything I've heard except in this book, was that they had been driving for days, and this was a couple months before, and the driver, their only person that was with them, fell asleep at the wheel. And the car overturned and went into a ditch, and Clyde and the driver got out. But she was caught in the car, and it blew up. And she was badly burned on the leg and on the hip, so she could barely take 3 or 4 steps. And so she was immobile. In fact, Clyde had to carry her. And for about 2 months, they were in a hotel room, and he was giving her all kinds of medicine for the infection and antibiotics and healing. But anyway, he carried her around. And the day that they all met their fate, it seems that Clyde stepped out of the car and they shot him down with rifles and automatic weapons. They had no machine guns. And she couldn't walk. She couldn't get out of the car. And they had no intention of letting her live. And so what happened was she sat in the car. And all of a sudden the sheriff, who wanted vengeance because they made a fool out of him, they took pictures of him with the two of them, and so they just riddled the car with bullets, and that's how she died. But she was incapable of offering any resistance. She, her leg was too bad, and I didn't know that. Of course,
well, it wouldn't have mattered. It was a setup, and it happened actually. It went down in Bienville, Louisiana. And believe it or not, even though it was Louisiana, it was a Texas Ranger who had led this. And they set a trap, and they...
But they never talked about her being badly
burned.
Oh,
yeah, well, regardless, they fired over 100 rounds, 150 rounds into the car with automatic rifles. And so the vehicle was riddled with bullets. Of course they killed him. And that was the deal. And they took him to Acadia, Louisiana later. And so that was the deal. But no, they killed them both in that car.
Yeah, well, I know that, but yeah. I thought I'd mention that because they always make it seem like they fought it out, and she didn't have a chance. In fact, neither of them did. The guy wanted vengeance because of what they did to him. Mm. And as far as the one other thing I wanted to mention was Dillinger. His ending was that. When he walked out of the Birocraft, that Sage, Anna Sage, she didn't have a red dress. She had an orange dress. That's the one thing. And the other thing is, when he was walking out of the theater, these men came up, running up to him with long coats and hats and everything. And he thought they were Al Capone's people because they told him to get the hell out of town or else. So when these two guys or three guys came running up to him, he thought they were Al Capone's people. It turns out they were FBI.
Right.
And they never announced who they were.
Why would they?
They were silent as... But they ran up to him, so he turned around and started running down the street. And one of them came up, grabbed him by the coat from behind, and put the gun to his head and shot him in the head and neck.
Yep.
They didn't give him a chance either. They just murdered him in cold blood, just like with Bonnie and Clyde. But I thought I'd mention how the criminals really did meet their fate.
Oh, of course.
And could I ask for three songs? Would that be possible?
Depends what the three songs are. Tell me, Jeffrey, what do you want to hear?
Okay, well, the Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, God, the Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde, yeah, okay. Georgie Fame, what else?
The one with the first 1960 song by the Beatles, Cry for a Shadow, with Harrison and Lennon. It's an instrumental.
I don't know that I have that.
Yeah, well, it was in their album, a 1960 album with Tony Sheraton.
Huh. Okay, I'll look.
And one last one, Wandering Star with Lee Marvin.
Oh, God. All right. You betcha. We'll get him on.
Yeah, well, by the way, Jeffrey means traveler or wanderer.
Okay.
I never knew that.
All right.
But anyway, you have a great night. I'll let
All right.
you go.
Good deal. Thanks for calling, Jeffrey. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah, I must admit, I don't know that much about the mob, but what I thought happened with Dillinger, I thought that's where the lady in red phrase came from, even though she was wearing an orange skirt. And that was a trap, you know, FBI trap. And apparently the woman actually did it for reward money. And she wore a bright orange skirt, I think it was. And that was so that they could easily be identified as they're exiting the theater. And so it is that they do that. And they got a whole thing going on. And Dillinger did sense the ambush. And as Jeffrey said, probably thought it was a rival gang and headed toward an alley. But the three FBI agents were armed to the hilt, fired four times, two fatal shots, actually, as far as would have been fatal, only took one, but entered the back of the neck and severed the spinal cord and exited the front of his head. And so, yeah, that's all I know. I had a book a while ago. I don't know what happened to it. Maybe as I continue to unpack our various locations, my never-ending sorting out after the moves. The Mob Encyclopedia. I always liked that. There were a number of things like that. And Dillinger was young. He was only, you know, 30, 31, thereabouts. And, yeah, so Chicago. So, yeah. I think there were actually five shots, and three of them hit him, and, of course, two would have been fatal, I think. But anyway. But it is interesting, and you know, very very different now, almost 100 years later. Well, that was 34. Okay, so yeah, almost 100 years. But nonetheless, there you have it. And so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. I guess it's time we get to one of your requests. In fact, I believe we had three left from Robert and LaGrange six-pack, and one of them was Clyde McFadder, and you'll hear it next on WGN Radio. And I'm Raleigh James, and before we get back to it, I want to talk about one of my favorite subjects. Yeah, you know it's coming, the Sea Crane Company. Emergency radios, there's an awful lot of them on the market, but the reality is that, as far as I'm concerned, and most of them fall short. And the reason isn't necessarily what they have in terms of capability of what band they're picking up or, you know, that kind of stuff. It's that, you know, let's say it's battery operated. Invariably, here comes the power outage and the batteries are dead. Or even if it's just solar. Well, that's great, providing you had, you know, put it in the sun, in a windowsill or whatever, and have charged it. But what happens when, yeah, you don't have solar, you don't have electricity, you don't have batteries? Well, what do you do then? Well, there's one radio where you're not SOL. That's right. It will work no matter what. And that is the CC Radio Solar with Bluetooth. Of course, it's got solar, and it's really nice. It's got a big oversized solar panel, so going to get a lot of use out of that. It's got a built-in LED flashlight as well, because let's face it, if it's at night and the power's off, what do you want? You want a radio, you want a flashlight. Well, you got both in terms of this. It's also got a battery strength meter. But the beauty of this is when you don't have any of that stuff, just there's a little hand crank in the back, wind it up for about 30 seconds, it's going to play for about 30 minutes. And so no matter what the situation, this radio will work for you. Not only that, it'll also charge your cell phone. Now, by the way, not enough to do anything with it other than make that emergency call, but that may be all you need. So this truly is peace of mind. It's really nice. And like all the radios that Bob Crane has developed, reception is just terrific. Excellent reception on AM and FM. Nice audio, too. In fact, good enough audio that it has Bluetooth capabilities if you want to use the speaker for that. It's also got the weather band and the weather alert, and it's got a clock, a timer, an alarm, and dial light, all the things you want. And it's about the size of a brick. It's white in color and really neat. If you can go to ccradio.com, you can take a look at it. Most times when you say hand crank radio, you think, what is this going to look like? Well, this looks really nice. So ccradio.com, look at the CC Solar Radio. Yeah, it'll work no matter what. Yeah, that's what I love about it. Now, if you can't go online for some reason, well, you can give them a call. 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. Terrific customer service. They'll answer all your questions, and you can order right on the phone. But if you can go online, go to ccradio.com. Look at all those features. Yes, including five easy one-touch memory presets. Yeah, everything. All the things a modern radio should have, all the things an emergency radio needs. You tell them Raleigh sent you at ccradio.com on WGN Radio.
Boom, 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 boom. Bum 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 bum.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. Does she need me as she pretends? This a game? Well, then will I win? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. I'd like to know when she's not with me, if she's still true to me. I'd like to know kissing, does she feel just what I feel? And how am I to know it's really real? Oh, tell me where the answer lies. Is it in her kiss or in her eyes? Well, it's a lover's question I'd like to know.
So WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, another one of Robert from LaGrange's six-pack, and Clyde McFadder, Lover's Question. And interestingly, Brooke Benton co-wrote that. If you go to Google and use their AI feature, and I love to do this when it comes to 50s music because they are universally wrong about everything. And on this one, I thought, by the way, the bass voice is Noah. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But anyway, I thought I'd ask, well, who's the bass voice on A Lover's Question? Comes back, Brooke Benton. Well, okay, that's news to the people at Atlantic and to Noah Hopkins, who is the bass voice on that, by the way. And redone 20 years later, Jackie Ward had a remake of the song that got to number 3 on the country charts, so there it is. But the original is the best, and I have no idea. Brooke Benton wrote it with Jimmy Williams. I have no idea if Brooke Benton ever put it on an album or whatever. I've never checked that, but probably should. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And what does Mike in Elmwood Park have to say for his bad self? So, Mike, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, yeah, my wife, I talked to you about maybe a week or two ago. I said that she was going to go for therapy and her vertigo.
Yes, how did it go?
It went real well. I mean, they evaluated, you know, the situation. The gentleman that took care of her, he kind of felt around, you know, by her neck and everything, and everything was, it was really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of worked it, and he did, there's a one test that they use, they got something that goes over your eyes, and he had her laid down like on a bed, and then kind of move, you know, lay down and then kind of sit up. He asked her, did you get dizzy from just making those two moves? And she mm-hmm. got dizzy a little bit. He mentioned that the medical Largo that he used, there was two different types of vertigo, and I guess she does not have either one. She's got vertigo, but it's different totally.
Well, what it probably is, we talked about this before, they don't know.
Yeah.
And so basically they call it BPV, benign positional vertigo. And that is, you know, it's just one of those catch-alls for everything they don't know about. Obviously, if vertigo is caused by inner ear problems, then that's like neuritis or Meniere's disease or something like that's easy to diagnose. But otherwise, it's not. And so usually the therapy they give you is Epley, and I don't know if they did any of that, but
they set up the there's like 6 sessions they're going to be
okay.
You know, she's going to go to, and I'll see what they do. You know, I mean, from what they did today, I mean, she, you know, during supper time she was making supper and she got kind of dizzy there.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, see, you know, and he asked her, when you get up in the morning, do you get dizzy? And she goes, well, I gotta sit basically for about 5 minutes till everything settles, and then I can move.
Now, you know? let's back up, because vertigo really isn't dizziness. You're using that interchangeably, and they're not. With vertigo, one of the things you can usually do is, let's say you're laying down and you're on one side and you've got pretty bad vertigo. If you flip to the other side, you might not have it at all. So there's things like that. That's why they call it positional. That in some cases, you know, basically it's not so much dizziness as you're standing still, but it feels like the room around you is you know, moving, usually circular in direction. Yeah, that, which is not really dizziness, but it is.
He mentioned something about, he asked her about that too, you know, would you lay on certain sides, how do you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And I see that, you know, I don't feel anything, I feel great, you know. And then there's some nights that she'll lay somewhere, you know, and I was, oh man, it's really, you know. And he mentioned something about crystals in your ears.
Right. Well, that's actually, we're getting back to Epley again. What Epley tries to do is move the dislodged inner ear crystals out of the ear canals and back into the part of the ear where they don't cause any symptoms. And it's fairly effective. You know, there are also home versions of that. But from what you, is this a chiropractor she's seeing?
No. This is a regular place, I guess, that they deal with this stuff.
Well, okay, all right, but I mean, in terms of
it's not a chiropractor,
right?
No, because he he just basically, you know, around where her neck was, he said it was real tight.
Right.
But he didn't make any, you know, like a, what, a chiropractor, he didn't crack anything.
Well, no, a lot of them don't, you know, that sort of, you know, some
felt,
do. But
she felt a lot better when he got done with it. Yeah.
Right, you right. Know? Well, that absolutely can be. If he thinks the inner ear crystals, otoconia is what it's actually called, if you want a technical name for it, when they talk about the inner ear crystals. And so they try to move them back, like I say, to where they won't be a problem. But one of the things she might do is keep a diary so she knows what position she's in when it hits.
Okay, I can tell her to do that.
And then she can see if there's any commonality as far as that goes.
Okay.
But
I appreciate the input because I've never, you know, I didn't even know they had therapy for this.
Oh, yes.
You know? I mean, this is all new.
Well, not only do they have, and there's VRT too. I say Epley because that's probably the most common, but a physical therapist can do VRT, which is vestibular. And usually, though, if you're doing that, they found out that it's Meniere's disease or neuritis or, you know, something. You know, like that. But when it's benign positional, it's usually Epley. But then there's also, by the way, there's medical, and I wouldn't do it, but they, you know, in some cases they give you anti-nausea medications. I wouldn't touch them or antihistamines.
No, she takes, as a matter of fact, she's got a sinus problem that she takes Allegra, but that's,
yeah,
you know, that's for a sinus problem, but it's got nothing to do with, you know,
well, it could, but it probably doesn't. But it could, you know, when you're mentioning sinus canals, you're close to your ears there. Don't kid yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
But the big thing is to be calm about it and to realize that, no, it's not a brain tumor and you're not dying. And I laugh when I say that, but all of us, I don't care who it is, when that first hits the first time, you get a really bad case of vertigo. If you've never had it before, the first thing all of us thought is, oh, my God, it's a brain tumor. And, you know,
yeah.
So,
not really.
I'm serious too. And I suffered with that on and off for 4 or 5 years, and then I haven't had a problem since. I don't know why it came. I don't know why it stopped. But it can certainly ruin your day. But I really did start to notice that there were certain positions when I could bring it on more than others, and when I was lying down, if I lay in certain positions, I could actually make myself feel better. So she might check that out.
Okay, I will tell her that. Raleigh, thank you for the input. I really appreciate it.
Keep me posted. Hope she does well.
Oh, I will.
Okay, thanks.
I will, and I'll probably call you for a request for next week, because it's my wedding anniversary.
Oh, really? Well, tell me what it is now, and I'll get ready. What do you want here?
Well, let's see. Since I don't have you by the skylight.
Oh, well, that's easy enough. All right. Yeah, what day is the anniversary?
27th of May.
Ah, all right. We'll do it.
Thank you, Raleigh.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Yep. Now, I say that. Let me make sure I'm on the air on the 27th. Yeah, I am. It's a Monday. Oh, it's Monday night for Monday Night Trivia. Well, we may celebrate it. Wait a minute. That's April. Never mind. All right. Raleigh, look at the calendar correctly. All right. Yeah, May. It's Wednesday, May 27th. It's one of the Eids, if you're Islamic, Eid al-Adha. So as far as that goes. All right. So let's write down Mike Wednesday the 27th. All right. Where's Mike? Elmwood Park. Okay. Now, hopefully I won't lose the paper. Yeah. Remains to be seen. All right. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. Well, we're going to talk to Eric in Minneapolis. We got Chris in Greenwood. We got Ken in Chicago. Oh, we're going to talk about vertigo. Okay. Maybe we'll go there next, kind of keep the flow moving. And let me also free up a line now. And so that Mike is gone, and so that there is one line available for you if you want it. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. So, yes, Jeffrey, who we talked to at the beginning of the show, requested it, Cry for a Shadow. Actually, the label, it's not the Beatles. It would become the Beatles, but it was the first thing they released. I was curious and looked to see if I could find it. Well, I could, but it's not the Beatles at the time. It was released as the Beat Brothers, and MGM was basically the deal, and it was a B-side. And I don't think that was the original name. I think it was going to be called something like Beetle Bop or something. But in any event, that's the deal. And if it sounds like it was recorded in a gymnasium, that's because it was recorded in a gymnasium. All right. Yes, in Hamburg. The group was performing as Tony Sheridan's backing band for a couple of tracks as the Beat Brothers. And George Harrison and John Lennon wrote it, which is, you know, unusual since there was no Paul McCartney in the mix. And Cry for Shadow because the style was meant to be reminiscent of the Shadows, who, of course, backed Cliff Richard. All right, so I think it's the only Lennon-Harrison song alone, as far as that goes. So, like I say, the original title was Beetle Bop, and it was intended to be the B-side of Y. And I think Polydor didn't choose that, but then here in the States. You know, I always wondered, because some of those early stuff on MGM, I'm like, what, the Beatles, my Bonnie, what is this? You know, at the time, well, that's what it was. It was, they had the right to the early stuff, and when the Beatles hit, of course, Ain't She Sweet was the kind of thing they were going to release. All right, so I'm glad, would never have thought of that, and don't plan to hear it again, but glad I heard it once. So 888-876-5593, and Ken is in Chicago. All right, Ken, what you got?
Well, I had experience with this 30 years ago.
Yeah.
When I went to the ear, nose, and throat. Okay, the first thing he said, like migraines, is 1,001 things that can cause dizziness. Medications, and there's two kind of dizziness. There's dizziness where you feel like spinning around, and then there's vertigo where you feel like you're falling over.
Right, well, or you feel like the room is absolutely, you know, I can't explain it, but it feels like the room is circular. I never felt like I was falling over. Sometimes I would fall over, but it certainly felt like the room was absolutely, truly spinning. And it is very different from being dizzy, but yeah, I remember it well.
Right, and when I went to him, he did, he says there's a nerve in there called the vestibular nerve.
Right.
And it's the most blood-rich nerve in the body. And if your neck cuts off blood flow or whatever, if you're laying down, whatever, you'll get that. And the test, here's the test he gave me. I don't know if they still do it. Sit in a chair. You're basically blowing air into your, he told me, do not eat before this.
Uh-huh.
He blows air into your ear to stimulate that vestibular nerve, and you spin around. You spin. I'm so glad I didn't eat. And he records, he's got electrodes, he records how your nerve is responding, how it's coming back to normal. And I was organically fine. So I found out it was a combination, like the headaches, it was anxiety and depression, nervous thing, it's pressing on the nerves. And the way you sleep on your pillow, and every medication says side effect is dizziness.
Dizziness is not vertigo. There's a very big difference.
Yes, 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 right, exactly. My description of dizziness is spinning around, whether I'm standing or laying down. Vertigo is when I get up, I feel like I'm falling over. I can feel like I'm stepping out over a cliff. Mm-hmm. That's for me. Okay, now what did he do? What did he do for me? Tell me what to do. He says it's probably the medication, but there's techniques to help you with the dizziness. He gives me this technique where he to bend the neck, do exercise with the neck side to side, up and down,
yeah,
and walk in a little round circle, backwards and forwards. You want to get dizzy. You want to have, you're training your vestibular nerve to get used to this dizziness. So you're building it up, basically, and it worked.
And that's great.
You got to go to ear, nose, and throat. Now, a chiropractor can help you. He can go up in your neck and where all that was, where migraines, dizziness, nervousness is connected up there. He will massage that and put some electrodes, and that helped me too.
All right.
I don't know if they're still doing it with the air. He's testing it that way, but it's like migraines. There's 1,001 that can cause headaches, that can cause dizziness. I got all that, you know. There was no magic potion except taking my medication for the anxiety and the depression. That helped as I got better.
Good. All right.
The nerve, the vestibular nerve. Now, I've heard about...
Well, again, not all of the cases are vestibular. You're right that probably 85% of them, they call it peripheral vertigo. That's vestibular. But central vertigo isn't. And they don't know. And that's why I say benign positional vertigo is they don't know. They say it's the shifting calcium crystals in the ear. Other people believe it. It's absolutely a brain issue. But they don't know. And so it's more based upon treatment. But when it's vestibular, and, you know, you can have vestibular uveitis, and that's one of the things he was checking when he's blowing the air. He wanted to know, is there inflammation going on there? Is there infection going on there? You know, and your answer was, no, there isn't, which is great.
No, so they responded. It came
right, exactly.
Normal.
So they rule that out, and you don't have many ears disease, so they rule that out. And that's why you're in that world of BPV. Who knows? So,
Right. It's unexplainable. And when I went in 1980 for my anxiety and depression, they didn't even use the word panic attack or anxiety. They used the term you had a reaction to stress. They did not use the buzzwords that they do now.
Oh, that's interesting.
They don't use any of that. Yeah.
So how many years did you suffer with this stress reaction?
82.
Well, not 82 years. How many years?
1982.
Okay, all right.
The worst was the first 10.
Yeah, all right. Well, good.
So we tried different medications.
And it hasn't come well, and in some cases that doesn't make a whit of difference for people. It depends.
Right. Now the medication I'm on, I get just used to it. Just deal with it. It will go away in a few minutes.
Okay.
Just deal with it. I know it's upsetting and it feels terrible.
Interesting.
It will go away. And a lot of it's the medications, too. And as you get older, the side effects become more pronounced.
Oh, of everything. Absolutely.
Yes. So he gave me some different techniques that have worked with the neck exercises and walking around in a circle and then backwards again. He goes, you want to try to make yourself get dizzy so your vestibular nerve will get used to that. So that was interesting. I used that. You know, it's like lectures, like someone like homeopathy, and if you have an allergy, you treat it with little amounts of what your allergy is. You know, you're fighting the thing that's causing that, and it worked. And the chiropractor too, I recommend.
All right, good deal. Well, I'm glad it did not recur.
No. Occasionally, I have it, and I know that's got from the medication of my age.
Okay.
You know, so anyways, okay.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Interesting stuff. I better stop talking like right now on WGN Radio.
All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the whole world can see that you were meant for me. All of my life, I've been waiting. There'll be no hesitating, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the whole world can see that you were meant for me. Stars appear and the shadows are falling. You can hear my heart calling. A little bit of loving makes everything right. And I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All of my love, all of my kissing. You don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the world can see that you were meant for me. All of my
love, all my kissing. You don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The world can see that you are what I meant for me.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's the Crickets. Yeah, of course it's Buddy Holly, but as you know, Norman Petty had two label deals going, released some of the stuff that was on Brunswick as the Crickets, and the stuff that was on Coral was Buddy Holly. So in this one, in this case, it was the Crickets, but of course that's Buddy Holly on lead. And actually it was Sonny West who wrote it, and it was Sonny did it as a demo, and Norman Petty wanted to know if, you know, if Buddy Holly could record it, and he figured, what the hell? Yeah, absolutely, that guy's got a name. And so that's how that happened. Buddy actually changed one of the lyrics, but... not a big deal, really. When Sonny wrote it, he wrote, all of my love, all my kissing, you're going to see what you've been missing. And Buddy, you know, all my love, all my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing. All right, so don't know that it matters, but either way, quite the hit. And that was one of Robert in LaGrange's six-pack. I think I've got two more to go on that. So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. Eric in Minneapolis, what's happening tonight?
Just some more idle speculation from my part, Raleigh. So I'm going to just throw out some stuff here. And my first thing is I was thinking with all this Dizzy and Vertigo talk, we need to tap into Tommy Rose.
Oh, God help me. Yeah, great.
Dizzy.
Yeah.
Have that rolling in the background. Uh-huh.
It's enough to make you dizzy.
Okay, so... Anyways, like I said last night, I was hoping that maybe some callers would come in or call in and say, you know, how much money they found, just like through happenstance in their lifetime.
Yeah, it's interesting. As we said last night, you know, I would hope that other people felt like me. If it was a sizable amount of money, I'd be trying to find the owner.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you just found... you know, fives and tens or 20s or something in the street.
Yeah.
Or just in the, on the ground someplace.
Absolutely. You know, they're yours. Never had it happen.
But I like your moral conviction, though, Raleigh. Like, to, you know, that your first thought would be to turn it in and everything. That speaks highly. I need to get to a level like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It, what goes around comes around as far as that goes. So,
karma, right?
Yeah, and absolutely, that's true. But, you know, you mentioned your total, you kept a running total of, what, $80?
Yeah, I'm around $80. And so let me tell you, because I said I was going to explain how I came about. So two times in thrift stores, each time I found $20 in a wallet.
Wow.
So, like, you know, they have, like, purses and wallets. All sometimes they're just in a bin. And I happened to just go through it, and I was looking, and I found on two different occasions probably about 12 or 15 years apart. I mean, like, long, long time. I mean, I found a 20 one time, and then it was, like, it had to be 12 or 15 years later. I found another $20 bill in a wallet. And ironically... they were both around the month of December. So my thought was, I was wondering if somebody had purposely placed it in there.
Well, that's
as a way to give to somebody.
That's interesting. I don't know. I was wondering that, too. Now, there was nothing in the wallet other than the 20, like no hint that there was anything else in there?
Yeah, no, absolutely nothing.
Wow.
I just happened to, you know, I opened the wallet. I wanted to see what condition it was in and stuff, and... it just happened to be in there, and it was kind of folded a little bit. But like I said, both of them, I remember both times it was in the month of December, like the middle of December. And, you know, there's people out there that will find kind of mysterious ways to give money back anonymously to help people out and stuff. So, you know, especially like I thought, let's say it's a thrift store, you know, maybe there are people that are just really struggling and, some person came up with kind of a very non-selfish way of trying to give back.
Wow. That is interesting. I didn't even know thrift stores had wallets, but I now bet you everybody who has heard this is going to check it out next time they're in a thrift store.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they are because as just as a matter of habit now, I mean,
yeah,
I'll look through a few. Like, I don't like going through a ton of stuff, but I'll just check vicariously just to see if something will, you know, appear, like whatnot. But
now, so let me ask you, was it the same thrift store?
No, okay. No, two entirely different.
Okay.
It's kind of a hobby of mine, like when I'm traveling in the RV and stuff. So, you know, I'll stop and I have a tendency, like, I mean, I'm not really looking for anything in particular, but I mean, if I see something that just speaks to me and says, oh, I mean, this is a really good deal, this is really something, because they're so much better than they were, like, I mean, in the 60s or 70s, the thrift store, like, my goodness, I would have never been caught dead in one. But I think somewhere around the 90s or something, the whole kind of their whole persona, their way of being changed. And it became much cleaner, and the quality of the goods. And then especially, like, I would say in Minnesota, not to, because I'm here, but they have some really gigantic thrift stores that are really, really good. I mean, I'm talking like quality bedding items and quilts and blankets and household things like that. I mean quality. Like, I mean, clean, well kept. Some of them, the tags are still on the stuff, but the quality seems to be really good. And I would say, like, the Upper Midwest has some of the better stores that I've seen. And as you start to move south, mid-south, and especially down even Florida's terrible, and hardly ever see anything worth it down there. But once in a while in the deep south, you might find this item or two. But I would say the Upper Midwest is like a gold mine for thrift stores. Like, the quality is so much better. And I don't know if that has something to do with the people, because, you know, the donations come in from them. And I don't know. It's just really, really good. And they're always seem to be crowded. Like, people are more accepting. And, you know, especially around Halloween time, they do costumes and stuff. And you see people, all kinds of people coming in there, get costumes from those places.
Well, you know, when I was young, of course, I'd always go to the thrift stores, if you will, because I'd be searching for records. And, yeah. You know, yeah. So whether it was Goodwill or whatever. But I do remember, I couldn't have been more about 14 or so. And every time I'd come home, first thing my mother would say, take a shower. And so she said, you reek of this. And I'd find some good stuff for a dime as far as that goes. But as far as later in life, when I lived in Utah, I lived in Utah County, and there in Deseret Industries, which is you know, run by the church, has the best thrift stores like ever. And particularly if you're in an upscale neighborhood, and there was one in American Fork that was unbelievable. I don't know if these people wanted to redecorate every year, but I mean, I got so much furniture there for next to nothing, and it was barely used. And it was the only place I've ever seen like that. It was literally like walking into a showroom, and there it was. So, I admit. Now, of course, don't have any of it anymore. Moved too many times since then. But, man, I'll tell you what, I furnished a five-bedroom house out of that American Fork store.
I think a lot of people do that. You know, people that own rental properties and stuff, I think that's, you find a lot of people doing that, you know, if they can find some decent furniture, which some, you know, like you said, if you go to certain locations that are a little bit more upscale, you find stuff that's like unbelievable. Like, I mean, and you walk away feeling like you just like stole something, because you just feel like you really got away with like saving a ton of money, and you got something that you're satisfied with. So that's the biggest point about it, you know, that satisfaction factor.
Also, if you're looking for books like paperbacks or all that, most of them are just a wonderful place for that. And also the books on tape, if you want something while you're driving around. Gotten a lot of those in those stores.
Oh, you're so right. You know what I like doing with the book section? I like looking through there and seeing books that maybe at one time were like even bestsellers, or they were shooting out, you know, the money that they were asking for them was outrageous. Now they're on a thrift store bookshelf. And, you know, you'll see a lot of big name titles sometimes of both hardcover and softcover books that were, at one time, were all the rage. You know, a lot of these fitness books, cooking books, fitness books, you see tons of them. And, you know, they're from sometimes as far back as the 70s and 80s and that kind of thing. And you look at it, it's kind of like a retrospective of American history. You know, like you can go through and see what was going on at a certain age and time. And this is what, you know, people were buying into or whatever at that moment. It's just fascinating. Like I said, I don't go in there with any kind of like preconceived notion of what, you know, looking for any one particular thing. But just as I roam through there, you know, I used to get a lot of stuff from my cat there, like from the baby clothing aisle and stuff, or stuff that's for babies, these little blankets and stuff. And my cat loved them. Like I'd try to find really nice condition ones that were cotton and, you know, had a nice surface, nice texture. Cats are real sensitive to, you know, tactile kind of things like that. So, but she always loved them and everything. But, yeah, so, hey, I also wanted to ask you about, you know, like early to mid-80s, there was a format that was really hitting the scene at the time. It was kind of like sex talk radio. Where they were kind of like,
yeah.
I don't know if it was Ruth Westheimer was like a big part of it.
Right, on NBC, sure.
But besides her, I don't know, I think this gal was a South Florida girl that was on one of the South Florida stations. Now, I think she was on IOD at one time, but did you remember or hear the name Randy Rhodes?
Oh, sure. Randy later did a lot of liberal talk radio, you know, politically liberal. Yeah, she did quite well for herself. And she was on IOD, absolutely. But
Wonderful Isle of Dreams.
Yes, right, exactly. And I don't know where she is now. I'm curious about that, actually. But she actually was a military vet, too. I think she was a Marine.
So, I thought she was on like KFI or something in LA as well.
No, I don't think she. But for a while she was on a few networks, but I don't think she was local to KFI ever. But could have been. You know, I was in and out of LA so many times that I don't know that. But could have been.
Yeah, she got in. She was doing some of that sex talk radio and stuff, and early evenings. It was basically like from 8 at night till midnight, something like that, 8 to 11 shift down there in South Florida. And then there was another guy that was doing the same thing that was, how about the name Tom Likas?
Oh, sure. I know Tom. I worked with Tom. I know Tom.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't really sex talk. I wouldn't say that. But, you know, he had an interesting side to him. And then he self-syndicated after he was national for quite a number of years. I don't think he is anymore, but I don't know. But he was on KFI for many years.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, he's from L.A., I think.
Well, not originally, but yeah, he actually moved out. I think it was Long Island, maybe, or something. I don't remember, but not L.A. But he was there for many years. And
I know he wasn't like an original L.A. because he had kind of an East Coast kind of edge to him and everything.
Yeah,
but,
like I said, I think it was like the Bronx or something like that. And as far as that goes, and he was I think the first station he was working on a WBAB in Babylon, Long Island. So that's what I think. And from there, you know, a bunch of stations and all that. But yeah, so he was in Miami for a while and on NWS, which, you know, the old WFUN.
Yeah,
where Neil Rogers had been. And so I think that when Neil Rogers, you know, there was that little lawsuit, and he got to go to WINZ, and I think that's when Likas and he became rivals, I think. So
yeah, well, Neil Rogers used to really try to sack Randy Rhodes and Tom Likas. It was kind of like a little bit of a back and forth sparring going over the airways, or just he was kind of mocking them and stuff at times and everything. I know there was like a kind of a big rivalry there for trying to, you know, get the South Florida market. But yeah, I just remember that during that, because I was there during those years, and everything, and I was just curious if you knew the names and everything. And
yeah, sure I do, but my experience in Miami, of course, pretty much you're talking about the 60s, much more than the 70s. I was gone by the early 70s, but there was talk in the 60s in Miami. WKAT was talk.
Oh, yeah, and, the 1360.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely. Man, I love those studios, because the studios dated back to the 30s, and the deal was the self-supporting tower was in the middle of it, and then raised above it was the control room, and it was all still, even into 1970, the equipment was all just all Western Electric, you know, like it was 1942, and then they had big studios in the back. It was just really, really nice, but they had a number of people who were interesting, but probably the standout was actually a guy who on the air was just known as Alfred, and Al Martinez was his name, but he would do stream of consciousness stuff and was just terrific. I think he was his own worst enemy personally, but you know, could have gone a lot farther, but you know, chose to be there and in Miami.
Was it a talk format
with
him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they went talk in the mid-60s. They were a CBS affiliate, and the widow, Frank Katzentine's widow, owned it, and hence the call letters WKAT. And she had an FM, too, which became the classical station. I think that became Timmy, TMI. But in any event, I don't know for sure. But, yeah, so it would have... Bill Smith was the program director, and, yeah, have a good day and hopefully a better tomorrow. You know, Harold Dole was on the air. And they had some interesting shows, and a lot of different people went through there. But as I say, Alfred was just a standout.
Yeah, do you remember the airplane guy? He was a pilot, and he used to do a weekend fishing show on Saturdays. Jerry Wichner.
Oh well, sure. Yeah, and he was an MOR jock before that. He was in Miami years, probably since the 50s. I'm trying to remember where he was, but
he's from Pennsylvania or something, I think, originally, like somewhere. I thought, because he used to talk about that once in a while, because he did overnight talk there in the 80s on
yeah,
I think it was INZ maybe.
Okay,
I'm trying to remember which station he was on, but I remember him overnight talk, and then he would always, on Saturday mornings, he would do like a flyover, like over the beaches, and do some kind of like fishing report, too.
Okay. Yeah. So, no, yeah. He was an old line guy, because he died like about 2000, and he was in his mid-70s. So he was, but he worked at a number of the I'm trying to think of whether it was INZ or where he did mornings for a while, going way back. INZ. He did mornings on INZ in the 50s when Rex Rann bought it, or had it. Didn't say bought it, had it, because that was a weird thing. But yeah.
I just want to make a quick request, because I know you're up against the news here. But I want to hear, if I can, although it's this century, it's Robert Lamb doing the vocals, and it's an old vintage style.
Okay, hang on a minute. I'm going to have to go to the news. In fact, I'm in the news, and Bob was very smart. So actually, don't hang on a minute. Since we're in the news, you can tell me what it is, and I'll look for it. What is it?
Okay, it's called New York Time.
Okay.
It's from the album 36, I think.
Okay.
And you'll love it. It's got such a sweet sound and great harmonies and Robert's vocals. And also, the other one is from his Bossa Nova album.
Yeah.
And it's called Girl Talk.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know, I guess that's a traditional song.
Oh, yeah. I think Neil Hefti, I think.
Yeah.
Everybody's done that, including Herb Alpert. There's absolutely nobody. And but Neil Hefti did Girl Talk, and he and I think Bobby Troup did the lyrics on that. And that was actually mid '60s, and it was for a movie. I'm trying to think of Harlow. It was a movie. And
that's the original version.
What?
Is that the original people that did the song?
Well, Neil Hefti composed it, and Bobby Troup did the lyrics, but...
Who's the original singers?
I like it as an instrumental, actually, much more than as a vocal. But, oh, man, who did it originally as a vocal? Ooh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know if you knew off the top of your head or something, but because yeah. I think
the first, you know, Neil Hefti, like I say, for the movie, I think the first thing was him doing it, and then Bobby Troup's wife, Julie London, did it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember them from the Emergency TV show.
Right, right. Well, that was Julie London, and she was married to Bobby Troup, and before that, of course, she'd been married to Joe Friday.
No kidding.
Of course.
I mean, that.
Oh, that was interesting.
They work so closely like that on Emergency as husband and wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that. I saw.
Yeah, she was married to Jack Webb when she and Bobby took up. So,
wow.
Yeah. And going back to Chicago Style, 66, the Young Holt Trio did an instrumental of it. And, of course, it's on a Sergio Mendes album. So.
Oh, I love Sergio Mendes.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I got to see today? On MeTV Plus, I got to see the Mod Squad.
Oh, yeah.
With Julie, Link.
Yeah.
And,
I don't
yeah,
know.
I, was,
I know Peggy Lipton was in it. That's all I know.
Peggy Lipton.
But I'm in the middle of the news, and I've got 2 minutes to go about my business. And so I'm going to go now.
Okay.
Talk to you later. Okay, bye. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, it was one of the things on my 8-tracks in the car. I used to drive around the country listening to that. And that is the Herb Alpert version of Girl Talk, 1969. It was from an album called Warm. And originally Neil Hefti did it himself. And, of course, he wrote the music. The lyrics was Bobby Troup. But the Young Holt Trio did a version of that. And I have to find that. I'm not sure that I know that. But Sergio Mendes did a nice version. And when I was talking with Eric during the news, he had mentioned he wanted to hear that. And, yes, there are obviously some versions with words, too, including Julie London doing it. And he also wanted to hear Chicago, but New York Time. But we'll get back to Robert in LaGrange's six-pack, because I think I have one more to go, the Chantels. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. The beginning of the show, I talked about the saga of the black paint. Yes, doused in it all over. And the white pants, I just took them out of the washer. I left them in there for like 2 hours washing and completely came out. So yay, Levi's. All right. Gotta go. Now, let's see. Oh, Karen in Chicago. You know, remember we had Eric talking about finding money? Karen found it. All right, what'd you find, Karen?
Hi. This was in the 80s, and I was working down in the Loop at the Daily Center, and I had a credit union about a block away from me where I used to go and I'd get paid, and he would help me with the bills and stuff. He was the manager. And one day I came back to work, and I counted my money, and I thought, wow, this is weird. I'm $70 over.
Wow.
So I said, no, this isn't right. So I went back to the credit union. His name was Mike. And I said, Mike, I've got a problem. And he said, what? And I said, I counted my money, and I believe I'm $70 over. And he said, oh, my God. He said, I just counted, and I'm getting ready to close, and I discovered I'm $70 short.
Oh, that's great. That worked out really well.
Oh, my goodness. I was so shocked. And, you know, you were talking about getting books at thrift stores. My husband and I used to collect books on tape, and we got so many of them at thrift stores.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a treasure trove. They have them to this day.
I still have some of them. In fact, now I'm 82, and I'm starting to clear things out, and I'm giving them to my nephew, and he is just thrilled with them.
That's great. That's great. Glad he enjoys them. Now, you know, I mean, nothing beats actually reading, as far as I'm concerned. But when you're driving on the highway and stuff, it's really nice to have something to be engrossed in.
You know, I love talking books.
Sure.
I read a lot of talking books. And it's just a way for me to relax when I'm just uptight or I'm bored. Maybe I'll sit down. I'll find a good mystery.
Good.
And I'll sit down with a mystery.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the mysteries, too. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And, of course, my favorite authors, and I can go through the list on Bard, and they give you recently added and most popular. They have the different lists.
Right.
And I always go through those looking for my favorite authors.
Who's your favorite?
I'm either James Patterson and Michael Connelly.
Okay.
And I also like J.D. Robb.
Right.
Who is actually
a woman,
Robert.
Yeah, right, right. Problem with James Patterson is far too often he's now writing it with somebody, so you have to look to make sure he actually wrote
it. Some of them are good.
Yeah.
The ones he writes with Marshall Karp.
Okay.
And who's the other guy? Maxine Pietro.
Oh,
okay. The Women's Club.
Okay.
The Women's Club are real good.
I'll tell you who I used to love. It was Carl Hiaasen, and largely because I spend so much time in Miami. But he's one of a few authors that really I got away from only because there were such political undercurrents that I couldn't take it. You know, I really don't want to hear about anybody's political viewpoints.
I don't either. And I got one. I'll find that with James Patterson, too. Now and then he'll get one, the president is missing or something political. And no, I want that.
No, well, absolutely. No, well, in the case like of Carl, no, the novels are just great, but they really are. They're funny as hell. But there's this undercurrent, you know, that just causes me to not read. And there were a few others like that that I used to enjoy that now, you know, you read the subtext and it's like, no, I'm sorry, do not push your agenda down my throat.
And I like the medical mysteries like Robin Cook and...
Okay.
Who's Gary... Oh, I can't remember his last name, but he used to be an emergency doctor, and he writes really cool books. There's a few of them, the medical ones, and I love the thrillers, the ones that they just make you nuts.
Yeah.
Because you can't imagine what's going to happen. Freedom McFadden is a good one for that.
Okay.
And even I like the police procedurals. Every now and then you'll find a Philip Marlowe or something that, you know, somebody has taken over and written.
Yeah, right, right.
After another, I found a couple of Jessica Fletcher ones.
Oh, sure. I tell you who I really like is John Sanford.
Oh, I do too, and yeah. So does my nephew.
Yeah.
That takes place in areas where I'm familiar.
Yeah, like Minnesota Northern. Mostly. Yeah, good old Virgil Flowers. Yeah.
Oh, yes, and in the summer in Wisconsin, too, Lucas Davenport.
Right,
oh,
absolutely. Yeah, well, that's really how it started before Virgil.
But, yeah, Northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that he was actually a writer for the Minneapolis paper. I think his name is John Camp.
Was he really?
Yeah, like I think his name is John Camp, and I think that he's like gotten Pulitzer Prizes. You know,
yeah,
serious
it is
stuff.
John Camp. I say that on a lot of his books, and looks that John Sanford is a pseudonym.
Right. He was at the Miami Herald, too, in the 70s after I was gone, and he was there. I think Carl Hyacin was at the same time. But then he went to the St. Paul Pioneer.
There was another one I really liked, and his name was Ed. A pseudonym was Ed McBain, and his name was Hunter something. I can't remember now what, but he wrote a lot of police procedurals, like he had the series The 87th Precinct.
Uh-huh.
I think my husband and I read every one of those 87.
Right, absolutely. I think it was Ed McBain. Evan Hunter was the guy.
Yeah. Evan Hunter, I couldn't think of. I couldn't think of Hunter. I couldn't. Yeah, I think we read all of those 87 Precinct books.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, well, thank you for. And would you play something by the Manhattans, one of the older ones.
On Dory, yes, okay. On Carnival. All right, on Carnival,
yeah,
yes.
There
okay.
you go.
All right.
Searching for My Baby.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay.
We'll do
thank
it.
Thank you.
All right, Karen, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
And take care.
All right, you
thank
too.
Thank you so much for taking it.
Absolutely. All right, so we got Cleveland Dennis, we got Dave, we got Ken in Prospect Heights, Eduardo, and I haven't forgotten about Chris in Greenwood. So we have, an hour and 10 minutes to go on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and those, of course, are the Chantels. Who else? Maybe. 1958 on End, and that, I think, ends Robert from LaGrange's six-pack. I don't think I forgot any, at least I hope not. So that's the deal there. Now, let's see what else is going on. Let's check out Cleveland Dennis. Welcome back to WGN Radio. or not. Okay, well, bye, Cleo. Bye, Dennis. He'll call back sometime. Don't we think. All right, so let's check out Ken in Prospect Heights. All right, Ken, are you with us?
I am, Raleigh, and it was tried calling last week. You were really talking a lot about radio stations and their history and call letters and who bought what and who sold things. I'm a huge radio buff. I worked for NBC Radio in Chicago for many years, and it's really sad, the demise of the CBS radio network. I've got friends that are still that were working there, and it's just I'm so upset that I can't believe that there wasn't even an opportunity that there wasn't a product to sell and help survive with the network. Yeah, 100-year-old network now down the drain. It's really sad.
It's not about was there anything to sell. It's about an unwise purchase to begin with. Entercom should have never engaged in buying the CBS group for the prices that they paid. The debt service is just enormous. And as you know, the debt service isn't like you get one lender. It's done in multiple layers, including a lot of junk bonds and all that kind of stuff. And man, when payments are due, payments are due. And so these are companies that are run, you know, some people would say they're run on greed. No, they're absolutely not run on greed. They're run on desperation because they're always within an inch of being under. And so this unfortunately was predictable, and it is sad, I agree, but you know, I wax sentimental for the day when we had a 3-year rule and the most you could own was 7 AMs and 7 FMs, you know, because it kept it down to individual businessmen for the most part, you know, rather than mega companies. But the world changed in the mid-90s with the Telecommunications Act, and it's big business and heavy financing all the way.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I loved the fact that, especially when you were talking about all the old radio stations, you know, you had a single operator who owned an AM, you know, or an FM.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got these mega companies coming in and owning, you know, 14 radio stations in one market. And it's just like, it's not fair.
Well,
the competition, it just isn't fair.
It is very sad, and it is very difficult to be an individual owner today. In fact, the saddest story ever, there was a terrific individual owner in Philadelphia, Jerry Lee. It was truly the Cadillac of all radio stations. Well, he had a partner who died, and he had to buy out the partner's widow at the fair market price. Ultimately, he went under. He couldn't do it, you know, not at those levels. You know, when you're paying for radio stations more than, even if the station sold out at top dollar and the payments can't be returned, you've got an upside down philosophy. And there's a lot of reasons why that happened. But the bottom line is, sadly, that we, the listeners, were the losers.
And I know that, radio stations are struggling for revenue. I mean, they're all, with so many different mediums and social media.
But they've done it to themselves. I don't have much sympathy.
You're right.
This started over 50 years ago when radio station slogans were, "We play less commercials." Never mind that it obliterated the English language. They played fewer commercials, but even so. The reality is that they would, during those commercial clusters, when they would play them, because they'd, 40 minutes of nonstop music. Yeah, well, then you get 7 minutes of nonstop commercials. I've always said if the CIA wanted to spread state secrets and guarantee that no American would hear them, just buy the third spot in on a music station. Guaranteed no one will hear. But so the advertiser was not treated as your business partner. They were treated as something to be demonized. And it went downhill from there, big time. And now what they've gotten into is programmatic buying, where somebody, here comes a commercial cluster, an endless commercial cluster of 9 minutes, and it's going to run in 20 minutes, and there's two avails. Well, programmatically, a computer can search for that, and they've set levels. Maybe they're buying that spot for a dollar. I'm not truly exaggerating much.
Right.
So why should that guy then turn around and pay for top dollar? And this actually, in the 70s, when we started accepting barter again through syndicated radio, that killed the national rate cards. So we could go on and on. Hang on a minute, and maybe we will. Don't go away. Stay where you are. And we'll pick it up right there after the news right here on WGN Radio.
As Has anybody seen?
See, my baby says she ran away.
I've been so lonesome.
We need each and every day.
I'm tired of searching.
Searching east and west and all over town.
Will somebody please
tell me where my baby can be found?
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and absolutely that is the Manhattans for Karen. And Searching for My Baby, 1965 on Carnival, it was the A-side, Blue Love It wrote it. So, we're talking to Ken in Prospect Heights. You still with me, Ken?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Okay. You know, you look at what radio's done to itself over the years, and in a way, I guess this is true of any entity where management is only living for today or this year or what have you. You know, they make the bottom line and they get a bonus for it and they don't care about the future. The first time I noticed that was actually when demographics came into play and stations were bragging about blowing off their teens. And I thought to myself, hell, if it's hard to get the 41-year-old female to listen today, how hard is it going to be in 20 years when you've told the teens there's no room at the inn? And long about this time, Barter came back with a vengeance through syndicated radio, Westwood One in particular. Norm Pattiz was smart. Initially, he went for soul stations and progressive stations because neither of them cared about a national rate card. They didn't have one. You know, they were selling things from the Waterbed Emporium or Jerry Curl or something. So bottom line is that was fine, but by the end of the 70s, you had major stations picking up syndicated shows. And what happened was the national advertiser could actually be on these radio stations by buying the syndicated show at, you know, $3 CPM or something, as opposed to what might have been $16 on the local rate card. And they wondered why, you know, suddenly national business was starting to fall. Well, it doesn't take Einstein. And of course, that proliferated big time in the 80s when we had satellite technology, and now we no longer had four networks. It was basically Joe's Network and Grill. Everybody could be a network. And they were offering every manner of programming, and you don't have to pay for it. It's all free. Just run these commercials. Yeah, at the expense of your bottom line. So, you know, that's sort of where we were languishing when we when the 80s come along and we start to do things like we're going to increase the amount of stations you can own, and then the 96, like we talked about, the Telecommunications Act. So it's a very different business for a lot of reasons. But as I say, I don't have too much sympathy for any of it.
Well, you know, radio's getting watered down. When I used to travel a lot, I used to love to go to any small town and turn on the radio and hear Bob and Hank in the morning, you know, doing
right.
their crazy radio show.
Right.
And, you know, now you go to any market anywhere in the country, and you can say the same thing for fast food. I don't know if I'm in a suburb of Chicago anymore or if I'm in some small town, because it's all national chains.
Yeah.
And what really upsets me is you got a major market like Chicago, and you've got major radio stations like WLS running all syndicated programming.
Sure.
Salem running all syndicated program. There isn't, and you know, it's just one political guy from the left. The next station is a political guy from the right. It's just so horrible. But I know it's cheap programming, and I don't know that anyone's listening.
That's an argument. I think people still are listening. Maybe not as long time spent listening. Maybe lower. But it's not just radio. I see what's happening across the board everywhere with consolidation. And you know, when you're consolidating, you buy something new. Well, the first couple years of business, your balance sheet looks great because, of course, you know, there's two ways to rise. One is, of course, to bring in more money, but the other is to cut expenses. And initially, economy of scale, you know, like for radio, you don't need three traffic directors. You just need one, that kind of thing. Well, the same thing's true for department stores or banks or what have you. So as things look so good, there's more and more people willing to throw more and more money at you through various instruments, you know, subordinated debentures in particular, but many things. And so you've got all this money. Well, eventually, you've got to operate them. And nobody can at that level of debt. And I see this across the board. We talk about it in radio around me because that's mostly what the people I know about. But I don't think it's different in funeral homes, for instance, or, you know, like I say, grocery stores or department stores, or you name it. Consolidation is problematic down the road because in many cases things are overpaid and you can't return that money.
Well, I'm always curious as to, you know, you have all these radio stations that are owned by one conglomerate, and you have one music director, some guy sitting in New York programming music for Chicago. All the promotions, all of the music, all the individuality, all that fun time stuff. I remember being a kid going to the beach, turning the radio on, couldn't wait to listen to it. It was so much fun. It's all over. Anyway, I'm not going to ramble on any longer. I appreciate, you know, it's just sad. It really is.
It's very sad. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the sociological things that have changed the advent of the Internet and all this. What we're talking about is just what happened because of consolidation and debt structure. But the good news about the Internet is if you look hard enough, you can find things that are interesting to hear. It may take some doing because, after all, no one's gone to Google and searched for something they didn't know existed. But I think if you happen on it, you are seeing some interesting things online because basically people can do it for virtually nothing. It's only when you have a big audience that you start paying, high data rates. So, yeah, I agree. It's very sad. Radio used to have independent personality all the way around. And I love the small markets, too, especially, you know, where Bob and Jeff in the morning or whatever were reading the paper, literally. You know, you'd hear them turning the page. It was just classic stuff.
I remember going through Decorah, Iowa. I was driving, and the guy was actually reading the obituary.
Yes, absolutely.
And what was available at the school lunch today.
Oh, yeah.
For the kids. And I mean, I just loved it. It was like I'm driving. I almost drove off the highway. It was just hilarious just to hear it.
No,
but
it was
mid-America, farm country, and it was just wonderful to hear, and it's just all gone. It's not there. Anyway, thanks, Riley.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Good night.
Thanks. Yeah, boy, I remember school lunch menus. I actually got fired over that. Yeah, a school board demanded I be gone because I complained about what they were serving the kids. And the item that got me was milk and pizza. Well, it was pizza and then milk. I thought, you know, no adult would eat these two things together. Don't shove it down a kid's mouth. And, oh, man, school board was just all over me. Hell, if they knew what was coming, suddenly I wouldn't have been, so objectionable, I think. But, yeah, remember that well. And, of course, in the small markets, what's new in pink and blue? Let's do the births at the local hospital. You know, on and on. Sure, absolutely. And the obits? Oh, yeah. I still do them on my stations, small market stations. You bet I do. And the police blotter, although more and more sheriff's departments won't tell you who they're arresting, which is another issue that I'll tackle some other night. Okay, so 888 888- 866-5593-8888, Raleigh. So Chris had a request, and he's been hanging on forever. So, Chris, what's your request?
Hey, I don't mind if I'm the new request, but you ever heard a song called Is It a Crime?
Who did it?
It's Mariah the Scientist. It's new school. That's the only thing on request. I want to hear the clean version of it.
Is It a Crime by Queen?
No, by Mariah the Scientist.
Mariah? You mean Mariah Carey?
No, the Scientist.
Mariah the Scientist? Okay. Well, you might as well be speaking Greek, but I'll look for it. Mariah the Scientist and Is It a Crime? You got it. We'll hear it together.
Yeah, and it's the clean version. Play the clean version.
Oh, okay. So probably I shouldn't do this tonight. I should probably listen to it first.
It just got one cuss word in it, and it just got one cuss word.
Yeah, well, thank you for the warning. I'll listen to it off the air before I play it. Okay, thanks. Appreciate it, Chris. We'll get it on for you. All right, so...
You're welcome to Save Radio.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so 888-876-5593. Although every line is lit up, so if you got a busy signal, call back. So what am I doing here? John, I'm off. Oh, why am I off?
Can you hear me?
I hear you now. What's going on?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you dropped out.
I dropped out. Huh.
Yeah.
You want me to reconnect?
You're hearing me all right. Let's keep it for right now.
Okay, yeah, I'm hearing
but
you.
But I'm getting a bunch of errors.
Okay, well, if you're getting errors, let's see what we can do about this.
Well, hang on. We can take it to the bottom here.
All right.
I can hear you clear.
All right, I'll take it to the bottom. And during the news, do you want me to reconnect again on 2, or do you have another line you'd like me to reconnect on?
Go ahead and try 5.
5, all right.
Yeah.
All right, during the news, we'll try 5. You got it. James, that's what Eric in Minneapolis wanted to hear. Yeah, Chicago, Robert Lamb co-wrote that. Our New York Time, and it is off a 2022 BMG album, Born for This Moment. All right, fine. Yes, very nice. Has that bossa feel to it. Gotta love that. So what am I doing here? Yeah, there's the question. Eduardo is in Tampa. What's happening, Eduardo?
Hey, Riley. Well, I called you because I got to remind you. Well, I was checking to see if you or John have gotten those
Swatch watches yet.
Oh, not going to do that. No, I'm aware of that because a friend of mine, grandchild, stood in line in Topanga Canyon for like, I don't know, overnight. And then the cops said, no, only the first 200 are going to get Swatch watches. So all of you have to go home. And I think they were selling around $400, but there were people that the only reason they were there is, oh, I'm sure on the used market, you know, on the resale market, I can get $7,000 for this. So they're making an investment. But no, I can't imagine it.
Yeah. And I think $1,000 online, but yeah.
That's what I mean. It's already there, and it just debuted, and yet it's a cooperative venture between Swatch and I forget who, and, you know, apparently people are willing to stand in line for inordinate amounts of times.
Yeah. Unbelievable, yeah.
So, but,
well,
you know.
Well, the job's going good here. I'm going back tomorrow and Thursday.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, by the time I get out, I mean, your show's starting, so if I got something good to talk about, I'll definitely call in. But, yeah, it's going good. I mean, I'm catching on, the different things you got to do. I mean, the people that I meet up are very nice, and it's good to see people helping people, you know, get well, help taking them to their tests, you know, the MRI, CAT scan, you know, you name it.
Yeah.
So... And then my coworkers are good to get along with. I mean, you know, they have a fun personality. So there's other transporters you talk to, and they're very helpful, you know, giving me a good pointer. So, yeah, the only thing is coming out at 11 o'clock, and you got to be like, I'm coming in from Brandon. It's a 45-minute drive. So
yeah, but, you know, at 11 at night, usually there's not a lot of traffic, nothing going on. It can actually be good.
Yeah, I asked my my cop friend over there at the library. I said, oh, anything to be aware of driving in Brandon at night? I said, no, it should be fine. So, unless you're excessively speeding,
right?
Because you'll get pulled over by Hillsborough sheriffs. You know, Raleigh. I wondered. Speaking of that, like in Chicago, they got like LaGrange police, but you know, I don't see like Brandon police. So. It looks like they're being covered by Hillsborough. Sure, that's kind of interesting that it's kind of the opposite over here.
Well, it depends. Is Brandon incorporated?
See, I'm not sure about that.
See, that's... Brandon, I don't think, as far as I know, Brandon is just a what they call a census-designated place, a CDP. I do not think there's any incorporation, so it doesn't have any independent municipal government. And when that happens, the police and all that are taken over by the county. So this would be Hillsborough County that serves it.
That explains why I see Hillsborough County sheriffs.
Right.
Yeah, there
right.
you go.
It's, and that's common. We had a lot of that in Los Angeles. And, in fact, Bel Air, where I live, did not have any city services because it wasn't part of the city of Los Angeles. And so what they formed... what they formed was the Bel Air Patrols, a private thing, because the people there, you know, were afraid, I don't know of what, but they wanted their own police force. So that's private. But, you know, Beverly Hills, that's an incorporated city, so they had cops. You know, so yeah, you could go through it. And a lot of the areas, like a lot of the areas of the San Fernando Valley, that was city of Los Angeles. So that was fine. But some of it was unincorporated county.
Okay.
You know, and then a couple things were actually their own incorporation. But yeah, so that's why. I think Brandon is one of the largest unincorporated areas, but Florida's got a lot of them.
Oh, that's interesting. I learned something new. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, where we are, like this studio that I'm talking to you from is unincorporated Gila County. So, but my tower is in, one of my towers is in the city of Globe. So it depends when my other tower is not, so, you know, and then like we've got Town of Miami, City of Globe, and then a lot of unincorporated. So you'll hear things like Central Heights or whatever. Those are not incorporated.
Oh.
And so, therefore, you don't get the city, you don't get city services, like a sewer. Yeah,
very strong lining, and it took out, according to the email, says Tico says 10 houses, including mine.
Oh, really?
Because I can see a few houses down. Yeah, a few houses down has lights on, but the other way, and I just saw like three trucks coming in, so maybe they're
Good luck.
Well, no problem. But they got the ETA as 4 a.m.
Oh,
by the time
geez.
I wake up, I'm...
Yeah, well, welcome to Tico.
Sooner.
Yes, I know.
I did call. I did call and do the honors. I don't know if anybody else called, but I called and said, oh, I got an 86-year-old mother. So.
All right.
Yeah, hopefully it'll get turned on soon.
Well, yeah, what they usually tell you when you say you've got a medical emergency is they say you should be on generator. So,
yeah,
I get that a lot.
Yeah, right. But it's not super hot. It's not
oh,
bad.
No.
So
well,
I got
no,
some portable lights on
right.
these stickies that you can get like at the Dollar Tree, and you could stick them on the wall and turn the lights on, and it brights up pretty good. So
oh, yeah, no, that's fine.
I got a couple of them in the house.
But for people with real medical needs, you know, they're on a ventilator or whatever, no, you better have generator power. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
okay, Raleigh.
Good deal.
We'll talk
thanks.
Again,
appreciate it.
This week, if you're on at the regular time.
Yes, absolutely. All week.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
I'll
okay,
call
bye.
When I'm done with my shift.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll find out more after the news right here on WGN Radio.
I can tell you people, they were the devil's children. Bonnie and Clyde began their evil doing one lazy afternoon down Savannah way. They robbed a store and hightailed out of that town. Got clean away in a stolen car. Their reputation and made the graduation into the banking business. Reached for the sky, sweet talking Clyde would holler as Bonnie loaded dollars in the jukebox back. Now one brave man, he tried to take them alone. They left him lying in a pool of blood and laughed about it. Enemy number one, running and hiding from every American lawman's gun. They used to laugh about dying, but deep inside them they knew that pretty soon they'd be lying.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that was one of Jeffrey's requests, and why not? Yeah, Georgie Fame probably best known for that, but I'll tell you what, he is a terrific jazz singer and loved R&B. In fact, he was a piano player of note, did a lot of backup stuff and all that, and American GIs had brought over some Booker T and the MG stuff, I think probably Green Onions, and he'd been playing piano up to that point. He hears that, next day goes out, gets a Hammond organ. And does very well. And but as I say, you know, America, we got two records, and Bonnie and Clyde. But there were so many neat things that he has done. And I think that he's still with us, and he'd be about 82 now, so not all that old. So I'm pretty sure. And last I heard, he was still active. So hope so. All right, 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And let's see, what do we have? Oh, Dave in Muskegon's been hanging on for part of his natural life. So let's see. Firstly, let me free up a line here. That was Eduardo. So there's now one line available for you. And Dave in Muskegon, what's up?
Hey there, Raleigh. How you doing?
Can't complain. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. Hey, I was going to mention, first off, CBS Radio Network, they mentioned, and this was in March, that they was going to cease broadcasting the news, CBS Radio Network, in June of this year.
Yeah,
because
I know.
They were like $100 million or $1 billion in the red.
You know, it's not news. We all know about it, and we've talked about it. So what else?
What else? I was going to ask Fran and Gary if they remember, because Fran's from San Francisco, a radio station called KSAN.
Well, everybody does. Everybody does. Fairly legendary. Not the first in progressive rock, but fairly legendary.
Yeah, because I was going to ask her if she remembered some of the artists they played.
Well, you can probably look that online and see it all as far as that goes. So, you know, nothing obscure about KSAN or KMPX as far as that goes.
Okay, KMPX, that was in Los Angeles.
No. KMPX was also KMPX was also San Francisco.
Okay, which one was 94.1 in San Francisco?
Oh,
was that KMPS or KMPX?
Dial position. Well, KMPS is in Seattle, so it's not KMPS, but I'd have to look up dial positions. I don't remember.
Yeah, because because now that's owned by Radio Pacifica, but back then that was the first underground station, because I don't remember anything until WABX, because I'm from Michigan here,
right.
Came on in Detroit, and that was basically the first hit rock radio station that I remembered.
Yeah, I think 94.1 is today, you're right, Pacifica. I think they're like KPPA or something like that.
Yes.
So, yeah. But anyway, why? What do we care about this?
Well, I was wondering if she could reminisce what she remembered about the station.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah, I was wondering if Fran could reminisce and tell the artists that she remembered them playing on the station.
Okay.
You know, and that's why I brought it up.
Okay.
And what is the first hit rock station you remember?
When you say hit rock station, that's sort of an oxymoron. But if you're talking about album rock stations, there were a number of them, probably. And, you know, the reason they were on FM is because people like Tom Donahue had to buy the time and couldn't afford to buy the time on AM, so he bought the time on FM. So that's how that started. And, you know, arguably, he was the first, you know. But talk about a format, as I know I've told you before, that I do not have any desire to talk about because I don't like it. Somebody else
can. You don't like hearing the Chambers Brothers or anything like that.
It's not a question of that. I didn't like underground, which turned into progressive, that turned into superstars and AOR. I didn't like any of it.
Okay. I understand that you didn't like album rock or progressive rock radio.
No, exactly. I mean, when I think of Tom Donahue, the quote-unquote the father of progressive rock, I don't think about when he was buying the time for $10 an hour in 1967 on KMPX. I think about before he walked out the door at KYA or what he was like on Wibbage. I mean, that's my interest. So by the time KMPX in April of 67, I'm pretty sure that's what it was, he bought the time. I don't care. I loved him on Wibbage, and he did a great job on KYA. And, of course, he had Autumn Records, he and Bobby Mitchell owned Autumn Records, which had the Bo Brummels and things like that. And, you know, he and Mitchell used to do all these concerts, bringing a lot of R&B performers to the Cow Palace in Daly City. So that's my version of Tom Donahue. I recognize that later he became big progressive king, but I don't care about that. I was more interested in who he brought to the Cow Palace.
Oh, what is the Cow Palace? Tell me that.
The Cow Palace in Daly City. Well, it started out agriculture. There were designs for this thing in the 20s. It finally came to fruition in the 40s, and it was exactly what you'd think of an agriculture venue, you know, like rodeos or FFAs or, you know, things like that. Well, of course, it also had a great auditorium, and so it wasn't long in the 50s, it started, really Donahue got there in the early 60s, where they would hold concerts at the Cow Palace, and I think the Rolling Stones played the Cow Palace.
You're right on that, because I remember hearing something about it. I didn't know what the Cow
it's a venue in Daly City. And so, that's it. But, of course, when the Rolling Stones played there, I think was 66, if not mistaken. But, you know, years before that, Donahue and Mitchell were bringing in all these great R&B acts, you know, to the Cow Palace. And it was just great. So, you know, that was my kind of thing. Now, by the time, like I say, when he walked out of KYA, And some people don't know why he walked out of KYA. It's a great little story. I'll try to boil it down. But every year, KYA had to go to the Santa Clara Valley Youth Fair, which is Santa Clara is San Jose. And, you know, that's typical for radio stations. They'd be at the youth fairs and all that. So here he is. Well, the KYA booth, KYA AM 1260, was right next to the Fender guitar display. And so here is Tom Donahue next to Wang Chung, nonstop. And this is probably 65, early 65. He turned to his engineer and said, I'm going out for a cup of coffee. And he just walked away and never even showed up for his final paycheck. And he went home. And so he was playing what became underground stuff he was getting imports from England. And, you know, his thought was, why aren't I hearing any of this on the radio? Well, I could answer that in a lot of ways. But anyway, he wanted to hear that on the radio. So he wanted to buy time. But again, AM radio was too expensive. But here was KMPX. Who would care about that? So for like 10 bucks an hour, he bought the time. And then, of course, in 72, that's when he went over to KSAN as general manager. And that's how that happened. But yeah, so a lot of people, you know, father of underground radio, progressive rock, AOR. Fine. I'd rather talk about the Cow Palace or Autumn Records. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I remembered that. And also, I got to tell everybody, there's a new station I just picked up. It's a takeoff of an old station that went bankrupt. KNAC, which was out of Long Beach.
Yes.
Now it's out of Las Vegas. And okay. I don't know if that's a big corporation put this on the air.
Okay, it's an HD3 is what it is. And it's an HD3 in Vegas. So, and it's at 99.7. And so I think they call it Pure Rock. And,
yes, it is.
Right. So this is part of that's Highway Radio. Oh, God, don't ever get me started on Highway Radio. But anyway, that was the deal, the stations that you'd listen to on the way to Vegas, you know, and you'd have things like it was for travelers. And I remember they had studios on top of the McDonald's at Barstow. But anyway, so it's part of that. So it's the HD3 of 99.7. And it's also on a little Victorville Barstow station, that 96.9 and 94.9 in Baker. So, you know, you're talking about I-15, basically.
Okay, I-15, what, radio?
No, I mean, what I'm saying is that's where the signal was. It's not in a city. It's on I-15.
Oh, the signal's in on I-15. It's not in Las Vegas itself.
Right. And interesting, it's owned, the drive, it's owned by, it's a joint venture. Heftel's still involved in it, and Point, I think, was the other deal about that. And so, I think one of them is licensed to Lenwood. And Lenwood was funny. I remember when Lenwood showed up. It showed up as an outlet mall between Victorville and Barstow. And then it becomes a place. Well, anyway, you know, that would happen, just like Prim became a place for a while on I-15. But anyway, that's what it was. But they also owned KRXV, and that stood for Radio 15, and that's what they were serving was I-15 and I-40. And originally they were, like, playing show tunes and hoping to sell time in Vegas. Didn't work so well. Or Laughlin. So yeah. What happened was it was kind of like a I-15 trimal cast, and then one of them broke away and became the drive, and then they went silent. And I'm doing this from memory, so you got to look it up to, you know, correct me when I'm wrong. But there were three of them, and then they were like Highway Country for a while. And Heftel, the only thing I remember that was interesting is Heftel won the auction over EMF, which was interesting. EMF was going to buy those two little stations that were covering I-15, but Heftel paid more. I don't know, like $600,000 or something. You'd have to look at it. These stations don't have a ton of wattage, to say the least, as far as that goes. So, yeah, that's the deal. But, you know, all this stuff will be online. You can find it. You can read about it to your heart's content.
Yes. Okay, because I'm going to probably at some point look it up and get some more information on KNAC and the ownership. And
yeah, 96.9 is KNAC, and the other one, the 94.9 is KHDR. You can absolutely, I'm sure if you look up KHDR, there'll be a Wikipedia article. I don't know for positive, but I bet there is.
Oh, KHDR, okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
All right.
You know, because radio's my thing. I'm a radio buff.
Yeah.
I love radio, and that's one of the things I've always been interested in, and the reason being is I'm totally blind, and that's the thing back in the day that got me through the day.
Of course, absolutely. But it isn't like it used to be, as we were talking about with Ken earlier. But it's nice when somebody's taking their HD 2 or 3 and actually doing something with it. And this is an HD 3. I don't know how much bandwidth they've allocated to it. I couldn't tell you how thin the signal is. But if you're listening to it online and enjoying it, great. And you can, believe me, you can check it all out. And it all started with KRXV way back in the day. And there were two stations, KRXV 98.1 and KHWY or something, 98.9. And they were licensed to like Yermo. And you can read about that because it was an interesting story. I think Howard Anderson was the first guy. He was the vice president of marketing for the Desert Inn. And so he looked at I-15 and said, you know, this is a whole corridor with people driving to Las Vegas. And that's how that started. So anyway, you can go ahead and read all about it.
Okay, I think I will look up the history of KNEC, the ownership.
Right, and then, like I say, also look at KRXV, because the others would not have come to fruition if it weren't for that. And then you can go after that and look up KHDR, and that's where you're going to get the KNAC information, okay?
Oh, okay. KRXV and KHDR?
KHDR. Like Heftel Drive.
Okay, KHDR.
Yeah, check that out, and that'll give you the KNAC information.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Yeah, good luck. Enjoy it.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
I'll definitely enjoy that.
Okay, good. I hope so. Thanks. All right, so 888-877. Why am I doing this? We're going to run out of time. But the beauty of this is we have tomorrow night and Thursday night, three big hours. So if we don't make it in now, we will make it in then. But right now, we'll make it with this on WGN Radio. WGN Radio will forgo the bumper because we've got about 7 minutes and I've got four people to talk to. So I want to get to every one of them, like Brian in Seneca. So, Brian, welcome back to WGN. By the way, I haven't forgotten about you. Joe Stafford, Long Ago and Far Away, and Nat King Cole, Somewhere Along the Way. You will hear both of them.
And one more to put on the stack, the Neil Hefti instrumental version of Girl Talk.
Okay.
From the movie.
Okay, I like
that's
that.
Significant for WGN because Mike Rapchek, who used to do the big band show when they still had Tom and Federal Savings sponsoring them.
Yeah.
That was his theme song.
Really? Oh, interesting. Good taste. Yeah. I absolutely like it. I think it's a great song. So, absolutely.
Yeah, and he was ABC. He was the WLS and WBKB, one of their booth announcers on the TV side for many years.
Perfect. All right, we'll do it.
And Bonnie and Clyde were not going to get taken in alive because they killed at least 9 police officers, 4 of whom were from Texas. So that Texas Ranger was bringing them in dead, not alive.
Absolutely, yeah.
Dillinger, he got taken care of because he was slippery and because he embarrassed the cops.
Yeah, well, that, and of course he was associating with people who were willing to turn him in for money. So our red dress lady
That's how they caught up with him, But he came in on a slab because he embarrassed him.
Ah, I agree.
Otherwise, they could have taken him alive.
I agree. Good thoughts. Thanks.
Oh, and that request
Joe Stafford.
What's her name?
Joe Stafford.
Mariah the Scientist. It's a 4-letter word for fornicate, and you're in safe harbor, so you should be fine.
Oh.
Because they only use it once.
Oh, okay. I'll look for it. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yep,
all right.
Bye.
So, good deal. And, I have no idea. I'm glad Brian's heard it because I am not. All right. So, now, Gary is in Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Oh, hey, Riley. Just a couple quick things. KRXV was one of the plethora of calls at 1540 in Fort Worth.
Yes.
Back in the 70s.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I love it. Yeah. And it makes sense.
And to answer Dave's question of about KSAN, I believe they were 94.9.
Okay.
From what I have been told, and I can't.
They could be
KMET. I'm not brand.
Yeah, I think KMET was also 94.9 in LA, the Metro Media Station. I think.
Yeah, were they 94.7? Maybe they were
94.7. You could be right. I am not good with dial positions. I used to be, but I'm not anymore.
Well, I can't give any up brands. Reminiscences about KSAN, but that's where they were on the dial. And,
yeah, I've never actually talked to anybody reminiscing fondly about it, but I guess somebody must.
We haven't talked about it too much, she reminisces more about KYA.
But every time a station's on 1540, and I had that at KPOL also, I laugh because, of course, PTR in Albany was on 1540, and that was the whole Juan Pfeiffero caper. Now, you know, that's...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, you know, every time I hear a 1540, I'm like, Juan Pfeiffero. And I've always meant to find that guy. I think he's still alive. He was living in Chicago for years. So
station had a great day signal, but at night, they didn't go east at all until sometime in the 90s they were able to open that up.
All of those 1540, same deal. Good day, lousy night.
Yeah.
Yep.
KXEL, they were the ones that blew east. I remember hearing them when I visited Cleveland. They were loud and proud there in the 70s.
Right.
And, anyway, I was going to talk about money things, but I'll call back maybe tomorrow and do that.
Good. Absolutely. Call early. Usually it's a vast wasteland at the beginning. And I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. And, of course, at KXEL today in Waterloo, as you probably know. All right, and another 1540, yes, indeed. All right, so we have John in Covington. Welcome back to WGN Radio. No, we don't. John gave up. All right, that means the last 60 seconds go to Kimberly and Dalton, if she's still with us. You there, Kimberly?
I'm here, Raleigh. I'm going to call back with the other part of what I'm going to tell you, ask you tomorrow, but the main thing we wanted to start with to tell you is I don't know if you know how special you are for all the kindnesses you do for people and you make their day.
Aren't you kind? That's so nice of you. No, and I'm just delighted that you call. That's what makes the show fun to do. So I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Okay, you take care.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, so that pretty much will be a wrap. Adam is out of commission tonight. Stomach problems, I can relate. So hopefully they'll get to the bottom of that. But the nice thing is Bob and I get together, and that's a lot of fun. And so I've had Bob tonight. I don't know if I'll have him tomorrow night or not, but regardless, 10 to 1. You know, a lot of people will say, well, are you going to be on at 10? Yes. I don't think there are any sports interruptions until about Labor Day. So live shows Monday through Thursday, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. right here. It's a date. WGN streams them nicely. I stream them not so nicely. I'm sloppy. But one thing I do is I put up the replays. So if you miss the show entirely, you can always go to Rolly.net, Rolly.net. Click on downloads and voila, there it is. And especially if you've been on the show, you can hear yourself. All right. So until 21 hours from now, I'm Rolly James. It's WGN Radio.
SantaCon, plus nothing to see here and cuckoos in the cockpit. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news, real stories, real fun. Cad Santa, God arrest ye scary gentlemen. Now we know why they call it SantaCon. The head of the sloppy drunk barf squall charged with making off with more than a mil in money raised for charity. Merry Mission Creep accused of jingling all the way to becoming the cringe who stole SantaCon, using donations to pay for a plunderful life. Folly St. Slick scrooged more than half the cash from the nonprofit for 5 years. The feds say, sorry Virginia, jingle swells, SantaCon smells. Bleak end at Wearies. The doom and dishonor of drudgery on deadly display, reports claim at an Amazon warehouse on the West Coast. Death of a salesman on the plant floor, but a boss blamed for waving workers away, allegedly announcing, just turn around and not look, let's get back to work. Not until paramedics appeared did that area get closed down, some distraught workers say. Amazon says people were sent home early with pay. That's the downed of the end working on the pain gang. Jet sounds. This is your captain tweaking. Meow meow. Woof woof. Big ol' pet airliners, as some pilots acting like flakes on a plane are making cat and dog noises across ATC radio frequencies. The FAA not pleased with the goof about cats and dogs, but some pilots say don't call me squirrely. When another captain called out the clowns for their meow and woof shtick, the peeving on a jet plane crowd responded with more kitty and canine clatter. Come fly the silly skies. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.